Hello, I'm Doug Keel, and once again I greet you and welcome you to Speaking of Schools, the weekly podcast from South Carolina's Department of Education. Today, even though we're into the month of March, we're going to be going back into the February ETV production of the 29th Annual Benedict College Black History Teleconference. Now, this teleconference is available online at scetv.org/education, but we thought we'd also provide the audio from this teleconference for you today on Speaking of Schools. The program is moderated by Dr. Bobby Donaldson, who's Associate Professor of History Studies at the University of South Carolina. He will introduce the panel of distinguished guests, and the program will delve into the special topic of Hallowed Grounds, Sites of African American Memory. So that's today's lineup on Speaking of Schools. We'll be going back to the February Black History Teleconference at Benedict College, the 29th Annual Black History Teleconference that South Carolina ETV produced, with the audio from that discussion. So join us. We're continuing to celebrate Black History Month. We're Speaking of Schools.
Morning. I'm David Swinton, 13th president of Benedict College. I'd like to welcome our special guests, our audience, our faculty and students, and our audience from around the world to this 29th Black History Teleconference. We're very pleased to do this in partnership with ETV to bring this history to our community and to the world. It's really very important for us to pay attention to our history and what has happened before, so that we can be sure that we build on that to make this democracy what this democracy needs to be in the future. Thank you, and hope you enjoy the teleconference.
From the historic campus of Benedict College, Columbia, South Carolina, we present to you the 29th Annual Black History Teleconference, celebrating our national theme, Hallowed Grounds, Sites of African American Memories. Now, meet our moderator and host, Dr. Bobby Donaldson.
Thank you for joining us for the 29th Annual Benedict College Black History Teleconference. I'm Bobby Donaldson, Professor of History at the University of South Carolina and Director of the Columbia SC63 Civil Rights Project. This year's theme, given by the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, is Hallowed Grounds, Sites of African American Memories. Each year, the association, established over a century ago by Carter G. Woodson, champions the teaching and the preservation of African American history. Throughout American history, African Americans have impacted the shape of our country. From port cities where Africans disembarked, from slave ships to battlefields where they fought for freedom, to schools and colleges where they pursued education, to churches and sanctuaries where they worshiped. Over time, many of these sites of African American memory have become hallowed grounds. One cannot tell the story of America without preserving and reflecting on the places where African Americans have made history. The historic campus of Benedict College, the sanctuary of Zion Baptist Church, the home of Majeska Monteith Simpkins, the African American Monument on the State House grounds, to name just a few, are sites that remind us of the struggles for freedom, justice, and equal citizenship in our nation. Today, we are pleased to have seven distinguished panelists with us who will participate for our discussion. Our first panelist is the Reverend James Edwards, Jr., who was born in 96 South Carolina. Reverend Edwards was one of the oldest students arrested in March of 1961 at a State House protest, and is the individual for whom the 1963 Edwards v. South Carolina United States Supreme Court case is named. He is a graduate of Benedict College, class of 1964. He is a retired educator and presently works in financial planning. Our second panelist is Mr. Tommy Preston, Jr., who is the Director of National Strategy and Engagement at Boeing, South Carolina. Previously, he practiced law at Nexon Pruitt in Columbia, South Carolina. Mr. Preston is the founder of Cocky's Reading Express, a statewide initiative dedicated to improving literacy in the state of South Carolina. He is also the current president-elect of the University of South Carolina Alumni Association, the youngest and the first person of color to hold this position. Our next panelist is Ms. Vivica A. Fox, a native of South Bend, Indiana, and a graduate of Golden West College in Huntington Beach, California. She is an actress, a producer, and television host. In 2008, Ms. Fox was honored at the NAACP Theater Awards, where she received the prestigious Spirit Award. In 2005 and 2006, she won the NAACP Image Award and the Prism Award for Best Actress in a Television Series Drama. Our next presenter is Mayor Stephen K. Benjamin, a native of Queens, New York, someone with deep roots in the state of South Carolina. Mayor Benjamin was elected mayor of the city of Columbia in April of 2010. He is the first African American to hold this position. He is a graduate of the University of South Carolina, and under his leadership, the Columbia SC 63 Project emerged. Our next panelist is a native of Conway, South Carolina. Sandra Rhodes earned a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from the University of South Carolina and a master's degree from the University of Cincinnati. In September 2012, she became the first African American and first female police chief for Horry County Police Department. In 2014, Chief Rhodes was named the Woman Law Enforcement Executive of the Year by the National Association of Women Law Enforcement Executives. Our next panelist is Cecil Williams, a native of Orangeburg, South Carolina. He is a professional photographer, videographer, author of 6 books, and the inventor of the film toaster, a device that rapidly converts film into digital media. In January of this year, Williams was honored by the South Carolina African American Heritage Foundation as the prestigious Herbert DaCosta Trailblazer Award winner. Recently, he was appointed the Historic Preservationist by Claflin University, his alma mater. And finally, we're pleased to welcome Dr. Paul Drummond, a native of Woodruff, South Carolina, who served in the United States Army for 3 years. He received his BA in Social Studies and his Divinity degree from Benedict College. An ordained minister, Dr. Drummond served as the pastor of the St. Paul Baptist Church and the First Mayfield Memorial Baptist Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. He is a very proud member of the Board of Trustees of Benedict College. Thank all of you for being with us today. Today, as we reflect on the theme of hallowed spaces and grounds throughout American history, I would like for each of you to speak briefly about a site or an individual in African American history that has inspired you, or a site or individual in African American history that young people should know more about. Reverend Edwards, let's begin with you.
The Lorraine Hotel in Atlanta, the Lorraine Hotel on the site of where Dr. King was assassinated. I've visited many times. I've had my children there and my grandchildren. And you visit there, you're on the balcony, we visit where Dr. King got shot, the room he slept in the night before it was his death. Cross over there to the street and wherever in the building where the fatal shot was took place to kill Dr. King. And you visit the relics of the bus for Rosa Parks, or End and the Freedom Riders, And you visit the pictures where he met with Malcolm X and Elijah Muhammad. And going into the Lorraine Hotel, you just don't want to go in to just to look at the relics and the pictures. However, it's very important to read. In your backyard right here in Charleston, South Carolina, is one of the major or number one historical sites for our history right there in Charleston. The Gullah area, James Island, and all other areas there and where the slave markets and things took place there is right here in the state of South Carolina. And also there's just other areas. And my daughter finished Tuskegee University. I visited the George Washington Carver Museum there many times. It's very important to see our sites because that enhance and motivate us as a people, especially our youth, to see these sites and be able to read and understand what took place at that time. Thank you.
Mr. Preston.
So I'm briefly going to mention a place and an individual. The place, Selma, Alabama. And the reason I mentioned that place, particularly this year as an election year, many of us in our generation and most individuals in the audience are millennials like myself. Unless we saw the movie, many of us don't realize the impact that incident had on the history of our country, particularly with regards to voters' rights. So I think it's important to acknowledge the role that Selma played in the history of our country, particularly from the standpoint as people forget that the struggle was going along way before that incident. But what we did see there is the consciousness of America started to pay attention to the civil rights movement during that the incidents that took place on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. One individual who was part of that I consider just a profound leader and someone that I admire greatly is John Lewis, who's a member of Congress representing Georgia. John Lewis was a young person at the time helping Dr. King and others to lead on that march. And when I look at someone like him, it really inspires me as a younger person because I recognize that in the midst of all of the individuals who were part of the civil rights movement, there were so many young individuals who were dedicating their lives to the struggle as well. So when I look at someone like him, where he started as a young individual and where he is as a leader in our country today, it really helps me to put things in a perspective that we do have an obligation in youth as well as an obligation later in life to make contributions to society. Mayor Benjamin and I had an opportunity to spend some time with him at the White House a few years ago, and every time I see him and think about some of the conversations we've had with him, it really does just help me to see where my place is in this country and in society and the role I should be playing.
Thank you. Ms. Fox.
Yes. For myself, it would be when the Martin Luther King Monument was finally erected in D.C. I've been to D.C. many, many, many times, and there's a lot of history there, a lot of statues and stuff. And I finally felt it's about time that we were represented in D.C. The monument is absolutely beautiful. It's breathtaking. And something that in life that you all should make sure that you go visit and that you see in person, because this was a person that sacrificed so much for our freedom and for us to have the right to vote. Now, acting wise, I would have to say for me, Lou Gossett Jr. Is such a wonderful man to meet and to have the experience of working with. He's an Academy Award winner. He was in the movie Roots, won an Oscar for Officer and a Gentleman, and every time I'm around Mr. Gossett, I always feel warmth and strength. And we also went to Africa before, and we co-hosted an award show there, and I got to spend a lot of time with him, and it's something that I will always treasure.
Thank you.
The number of historic sites here in Columbia are significant and numerous, and the work that Dr. Donaldson's been doing and his team with the Columbia SC 63 project has really, I think, enhanced our awareness of the various sites. I'm tempted to talk about the African American History Monument. I'm actually tempted to talk about the Edwards decision, which is still taught in law schools all across this country. But we've spent more time lately, and Dr. Donaldson and I have actually been sharing some messages back and forth, just talking about the Reconstruction era in South Carolina. And it's so important that if you don't know names like Robert Carlos DeLarge or Robert Brown Elliott or Robert Smalls, understanding what happened not before the Civil War, during the Civil War, but what happened immediately after the Civil War.
Right.
And understanding what empowered African Americans, empowered with the ballot, exactly the amount of change that happened all across this country during the Reconstruction, or some may call it the Radical Reconstruction. That you had African Americans, Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, on the Supreme Court here in the 1800s. And if I had to pick one site, I'd say the historical site would be this campus right here, Benedict mm-hmm. College. The HBCUs that emerged during the Reconstruction era in South Carolina, depending on which historian you talk to, some will say it ended in the 1870s, some will say the 1890s, wherever it happened. But the amount of cultural, historic, and economic and educational contributions that historically black colleges, and this one in particular, had on the history and the trajectory of this country,
yes,
cannot be measured. And so I'd say right here, Benedict College.
I know that's right.
Being from Horry County, I had the opportunity to be directly influenced by, to me, one of the most influential individuals in black history, and that was the Reverend Dr. H.H. Singleton, who is the father, or was the father, of full professor here, Harry Singleton. Reverend Singleton taught the African Americans in Horry County that it was okay to stand up and be proud about who you are. And additionally, he taught us that it was okay to stand up against social injustice. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I believe that we were all changed. He was my eighth grade science teacher. So I had the ability to learn from him the importance of education. And then when I got older as a young adult, I watched him march through the streets of Horry County and stand up against social injustices. And then as a police officer, I was able to walk along beside him and protect him when his life was being threatened. So I was able to watch and be influenced by him for the majority of my adult life. And that would be the person that I found most influential.
Thank you. Mr. Williams.
Well, freedom is not an easy task. We've been fighting in this country for a long time to obtain freedom, justice, and equality. And so many events and people come to mind because being a correspondent for Jet Magazine since I was 14, I've covered so many things. But on Monday of this week, just to bring it down and maybe condense it into two, I attended the 48th anniversary of the what is known as the Orangeburg Massacre, an event where young men and young ladies and high school and college students were fighting really for the right to really bowl in Orangeburg because their closest place they could bowl was coming here to Columbia. And imagine, even though through the passage of Civil Rights Acts of the mid-1960s, in Orangeburg there were pockets of segregation that prevented African Americans because of the color of their skin and their race from merely bowling, if you can imagine that, at a time in America when much of America had changed. So this is one of my picks. And also, I would also think that my coverage of Harvey Gantt is a hero of mine. And on the Clemson University campus, when Harvey Gantt became the first of our race to go to Clemson, I was one of the four persons on the campus that day, African Americans. SLED had predicted that there would be possibility of maybe violence occurring, that even the African American staff who worked for Clemson were asked not to attend that day. But thankfully it was peaceful. But Harvey Gantt really is a model of, I think, African American attainment and achievement, having become a successful attorney, architect. If you go to Charlotte, the skyline of Charlotte has been influenced by this African American architect. So he would be my favorite hero.
Thank you. Dr. Drummond.
Historically, when Israel crossed the Red Sea before the Lord instructed them to select 12 stones, to serve as a monument. And he said to the people, when your children ask, what meaneth these stones, tell them about your history, which is relative to the black man's history. Historically, right here in Charlotte, Zion Baptist Church made me what I am, which is not much. I was the chauffeur for the late Dr. J.P. Reeder, who taught me never to allow the patrolman to slip up behind you. Always watch him in your rearview mirror and wave at him when you meet him. There is also a building on Benedict's campus where the late Dr. Bicotes lived. I was his chauffeur also. I remember historically when I was at Benedict, I was the president of a religious organization, and we had a gathering with Morris College. And on this particular instance, which was an embarrassment to me, I grew up in the country, and I never had a knife and a fork. And so I sat by Mrs. Bicotes in Morris College, and we had chicken. And I never had a knife and a fork. And she took her knife and started carving the chicken. I picked up my knife, and my chicken ended up in her plate. She acted like she didn't want to give me my chicken, so I reached and got my chicken and put it back. I'm pleased to be here. God bless you. Yes. Historically, let us not forget.
That's right.
From whence we've come.
Yes.
Well, Dr. Drummond, thank you. So we've come a long way.
Amen.
Since you were on the campus of Benedict College, you mentioned earlier Zion Baptist Church. And Zion, for so many, has been an integral space in terms of shaping the struggle for civil rights in Columbia, in South Carolina, and around the nation. In 55 years ago, several students from this campus met at Zion Baptist Church, marched through the streets of the city of Columbia, and found themselves at the State House. And they were arrested for disturbing the peace. You're among those. Reverend James Edwards and others were there. Cecil Williams was the photographer. Not many people know about that important moment in the nation's history and its meaning and its consequence. And ironically, there are some today who argue that there is no further need for black history, that we should close the book and move on. How do you respond to such a claim today in light of what we've heard thus far and your own experiences? So, Reverend Edwards, you were one of those students arrested who went to jail, whose conviction was overturned by the United States Supreme Court. Is there a further need for black history in America?
You'll never know where you're going unless you know where you've been.
Say it.
Amen.
I'll have to mention this in about the sites, and this will play over parts in what we're talking about now in this title. I will have to say that my granddaddy grew up with the late Dr. Benny M. Mays in the area where I'm from. And I had the opportunity to sit at his feet as coming up as a child. The late Dr. Benny M. Mays, Dr. King's mentor. He spoke at our high school graduation at that time, then he was speaking at the college graduation when I graduated in 1964. I connected up back with him. By the way, when the civil rights movement started, I got involved in that in the Atlanta area, you know, and around Dr. King. The black history is most important to be taught. And we should instill it in our children from day one so they'll know who they are and they'll be proud of themselves. That will give them more moral, more character, more integrity, and walk circumspectly in their right in this country. We have a rich history. We gave this world civilization, Africa out of Egypt. Now, I won't program on that and preach on that, but you understand what I'm saying. We were slaves in this country, and we came here in the belly of a ship. And we fought through to where we are today. We had to fight through Jim Crow, segregation, all these different areas. And you must be proud of yourself and read your history as much as you can and instill it in your generation as well, because we are a great people. We are the chosen generation. Thank you.
I'm a firm believer that that you can't be what you can't see.
Right. Mm.
And there are children, I know we're going to talk about education today, I know there are children that are still growing up in South Carolina that don't see people that look like them in leadership positions. I grew up in Pickens County, South Carolina, and even in this generation, I didn't meet my first black attorney until I came to college at the University of South Carolina. Now, how would I have been able to go to law school and become an attorney if I hadn't met those individuals here in Columbia when I came here? When I think about black history of our country right now, there's so many individuals who contributed to where we are today. And if those kids can't see those individuals and they don't know about those individuals, there's no way that they'll have an opportunity to have those shared experiences and go beyond what those individuals went through. I shared this story last night when I was in college, took a tour to Selma, and we were in the Selma Museum, and there was the director there, and she was interacting with us, telling us the history of the incident there, and she could tell that the students weren't really paying attention to her. They're on their cell phones, they're talking, they're hanging out, and she stopped us, and she said, "You guys wear your rights on your sleeves. You guys wear your rights on your sleeves." And for the first time in my life as a college student, it just struck me that there was so much that, so many times that I had let life go on around me and not paid attention to what was important, that there were so many people who fought for me to have the opportunities that I have today. And I look at individuals like these three here who are literally legends in our community that fought for us to have the opportunity to do the things that we do in our lives today, the things that we take for granted every single day of our lives. And I think young people, and I can say that because I am part of the millennial generation, young people, we've forgotten where we come from. We have no idea where we've come from. And if it's not, if we don't have black history, we're going to continue to lose track of that. And that's why I think it's so important that we continue to teach it. But more importantly, that we continue to have dialogues like this where we're seeing history in the making and witnessing and having an opportunity to interact with the legends that we have here today.
Now, this is a subject for me recently that really got a lot of exposure because there was a, and I'm getting angry about this, a sellout actress by the name of Stacey Dash that said we should not have African-American Black History Month.
I know it was coming.
And y'all, I'm going to tell y'all.
Talk to us.
That was that one time when if I could have went through that screen, I would have got her for y'all. I am the anti-Stacey Dash. We should absolutely have Black History Month.
That's right.
For our generation, as I will piggyback off what they said, for you all to realize the sacrifices that so many have made so that you all will know the intelligence and contributions of so many African Americans that have created things that have made wonderful strides for you all to have days like we're having today and discussions like we're having today, especially for people in my industry that there was a time that we could not even sit in the room, or when we sat in the room, we had to sit in the back of the room.
Yes, ma'am.
Now look at y'all all sitting here today.
Look at you.
And I'm just trying not to get so choked up and get emotional, because I could be a little bit of a crybaby sometimes, but I'm a strong crybaby. How proud I've been since I've been visiting a lot of the historical black colleges. How proud y'all making me.
Beautiful.
But y'all got to know y'all history. Right. And y'all got to continue to plant seeds so that this tree will continue to grow. All right? And I just want to let y'all know, absolutely, we should have Black History Month and celebrate it forever and celebrate the rest of the year, too. Woo, sorry, y'all.
Now, I'm not going to cry, y'all.
I'm trying to hold on to these lashes, y'all.
The answer is an obvious yes. And when people suggest otherwise, we need to ignore them. The contributions of the African seed under the American sun have been significant. But we also need to make sure that we understand that the contributions of people of color and people from the great continent of Africa didn't begin at Gadsden's Wharf here in Charleston. We look at the contributions of people of color all across the diaspora, all across the entire world, and we've been making contributions of significance. Armenians love to make sure we all understand the Armenian genocide.
Yes.
Our Jewish friends, mm-hmm, make sure no one ever forgets the Shoah or the Holocaust.
That's right.
And we need to make sure that people understand the journey that Africans have made here in America. It is important to give us context as to where we are now and where we're going to go. So the answer, in a very brief response, is absolutely yes. Look forward while always looking back. All right.
I think it's important that not just our people know Black history. Speaking from a law enforcement perspective, I think that we know the history of police in the Black community has often been considered volatile.
Yes.
And I think it's important that all law enforcement officers recognize and realize why there is the strife between law enforcement and the Black community, and it is because of the history, mm-hmm, that law enforcement has had with the Black community, especially during the 1960s.
Yes.
I heard Reverend Williams and Dr. Drummond over here speaking last night about the dogs and the water hoses.
Yes.
Reverend Edwards, I apologize, and the water hoses and everything. And it hit me so very hard because it was the people in my profession that was a part of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think in knowing the history between law enforcement and Black community is so important for the law enforcement community to recognize that so that they can learn from it and understand, mm-hmm, why sometimes when they pull up to a call, people are not excited to see them.
Okay.
Because of the history that has taken place.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The only problem I have with Black history, there has not been enough of our story told. Since the beginning of mankind, when we first appeared on this earth, in the caves of Spain, human beings made their story and their mark on the caves. And in every part of history, there have been people who have recorded it. If you bring it on down to when Christ walked in Jerusalem, those stories are told in the Bible. If you bring it on down to Columbus sailing and bring it on down to the coverage of the Civil War by the photographer Matthew Brady. If you bring it on down to the Wright brothers' flight at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, 200 miles from here, those, while not always being African Americans making history, still yet the need for African American history, our story must be told. Only problem I have with his story is that we ought to put more of, instead of his story, our story,
yes,
because,
yes,
we've got to tell our story better. And Ms. Fox, I'd like to make you aware while you're here, since you're a producer and one of my favorite actresses, that here in South Carolina, we have the ideal, we have just everything that California has in South Carolina. We have the mountains, mm-hmm, we have the plains, we have 260, I think, some days of sunshine. We have excellent production facilities right here in South Carolina. And one of the ways to reach and teach Black history, in my way of opinion, is through social media, through television programs, through movies, mm-hmm. and our story needs to be told. But this would make an excellent place for you to maybe in one of your future endeavors mm-hmm. think about producing a movie here in South Carolina.
I would definitely like to work on that, absolutely. Yes, I always believe in giving back and making sure that our stories are told correctly. I prided myself on doing that. Others have told me when we're doing films, how we walk, how we talk, how we act, how we love one another. And I tell them, no, you don't know exactly how we are. And I stand up, and I've gotten in a lot of fights on sets, standing up and making sure that our stories are told positively and correctly. And I will continue to do so. So I'm gonna work on that South Carolina budget, y'all. Okay.
Dr. Drummond.
If we know anything about the plight of Israel's history as recorded in the Old Testament, the story of the black man runs parallel to the history of Israel. If God deemed it necessary to have the history of Israel recorded, how much more so should the history of black folk be recorded? I grew up in the country. I walked at least 3 miles from first grade through eighth grade. Rain or shine, sleet or snow. I even had to cross a creek. And the old folk put rocks in the creek so that we could step on the rocks to keep our feet from getting wet. When it rained and the water rose waist deep, we still had to get across that creek in order to get to school. So the old folk cut down a tree, placed one end on one bank and one on the other, and we had to walk that log. The young ladies who were not agile as we were had to sit down and scoot across, but they got across. When I finished the eighth grade, there were no public high schools for black folk. I walked 3 miles, caught a trailway bus, paid 50 cents, rode 7 miles, got off, walked 1 mile to New Bethel High School, had to repeat that, go back home and caught Maud, who was a mule and plowed from Kent Sea to Kent Sea. Our history is unique. I'm not also a retired chance preacher. I preach every chance I get. But I'm also a public school teacher. I got certified as a teacher when I was attending Benedict. So I'm still in the public schools at 83 years old.
All right. All right.
I left Charlotte. I'm through. Yesterday, went to school at 7:30, taught 3 classes of eighth graders, asked how many of you know the meaning of Black History Month as related in February. I saw 3 hands. Our story needs to be told. We sat in a plush hotel last night. I can remember when we had to wash dishes in order to be able to get in there. Last night, the folk who, yeah. That we used to wash dishes for were washing dishes for us. Look from whence we have come. This is a true story. I came from Woodruff, South Carolina. It was reported that a black man dared to wear a shirt, white shirt, and a black necktie because it looked like a black man choking a white man. True story. I grew up in Woodruff. We did our little thing on Saturday night at 10 o'clock. We had to get out of there riding or running. Well, the policeman came through and closed the little 2 juke joints that we had. Look from whence we've come. Young people, thank you so much.
So Dr. Drummond, you told of the familiar account
walking to your rural school. One of the important chapters in American history is the May 1954 Brown versus Board Supreme Court decision, a decision rooted deeply in South Carolina, in Clarendon County, and few know that important aspect of the story, that called for the end of segregation and called for the equalization of schools in America. That was a milestone victory, in great part because of the work of the NAACP and other civil rights pioneers. Today, as we look at our public schools, we are reminded of the great strides and the ongoing struggles and the real push for equalization in our schools throughout our nation. As all of you think about the long struggle in civil rights and the improvements of education, what are your thoughts about where we are now and what more should be done or could be done to improve education for all Americans? Reverend Edwards.
An improvement for education in America, our public school curriculum, they have watered down a whole lot of information that our children should get or be taught. There's a lot of things in the curriculum should be changed, and a lot of things should be placed in our public school books. There's a lot of school systems don't teach civics anymore. They don't teach government. All these things are very important to be taught. And we're talking about Black history now. And of course, we should be in those books. I can remember that Dr. King would be, and Harriet Tubman almost would be in the back of the book. Now we're in the middle of the book. But our history should be placed in there. Education is so important. Education is needed so much in the public schools on a higher level than it is today. And so the whole curriculum in a lot of areas need to be changed because our children need to be able to finish high school and go to college and get a good education. And a lot of things, like I'll repeat myself, need to be changed in the curriculum because a lot of things are not there that should be there. By me knowing as an experience of a public school teacher, you know, the kids, some of the things that children should have there that they're not getting, and it's downplayed. I could go deeper, but I'll stop right there.
Okay. So Dr. Donaldson talked about Brown v. Board of Education's historic Supreme Court decision and alluded to the fact that that it had its start in South Carolina. Briggs v. Elliott was a case here in South Carolina in Clarendon County that really became the catalyst for school desegregation in our country. When I think about the fact that that started in South Carolina and I look at where we are today, there's no doubt that we've made significant strides in education. But when I go to schools around South Carolina, still to this day, I'm always shocked by not only physical conditions of schools that our children are having to go through, but also as a state, as a country, how much work still needs to be done to make sure that our kids have the resources needed to be successful in life. As you heard my history, so I work for the Boeing Company. It's the world's leading aerospace company. And we are constantly talking about, I feel like I spend most of my time talking about workforce development and what do we need to make sure that kids, that we have a pipeline of kids who graduate from college and have the opportunity to go into companies like ours and have successful jobs. And I will tell you that when we look at curriculum, when we look at our schools, there's still so much that needs to be done to make sure that kids have the skill set that they need to get jobs at places like Boeing. We really need to be paying attention to the fact that there are countries, and this is globalization, there are countries that are better preparing their kids in math and science and technology. We have schools, and the governor talks about this, that you have schools here in the Columbia area where every kid is using an iPad instead of textbooks. Mm-hmm. And you have schools in other parts of the state where they literally don't even have a projector to put information on a screen. Mm-hmm. The inadequacies of some of our schools is completely depressing, and it's unacceptable, and we have an obligation as people in this state to stand up and say that all children are in our state, no matter where they're from, no matter where they're from, no matter what color skin they have, no matter what community they're from, should have a high-quality education. And that's our responsibility as citizens of this state. Our company is very committed to that. And it's something that we need to think about. We really do need to think about. And all of the young people in the room, you should be just as committed to making sure that we improve our education system as all the other individuals in this room.
That's right.
I know, I'm trying to get it together, y'all. you know, there's a thing that NAACP has always said, that a mind is a terrible thing to waste. So we just got to make sure that you guys continue to get educated, to make sure that you guys have the necessary funds to have a proper education, and so that you all can have as many opportunities, not only based on the color of your skin or your gender, as other nationalities do right. too. And we're going to continue to fight for that for y'all, just so you know. And I'm going to let y'all, because I'm trying to get it together. I've been so moved here today. I really have been. I didn't expect that to happen.
Absolutely. The history from whence we've come, and certainly some of you have been paying attention in South Carolina, the Abbeville lawsuit that has been ruled on by the Supreme Court. Now we're at the point now where our legislature is going to have to determine whether or not they're going to invest more in our schools all across South Carolina, trying to pursue some degree of educational equity. A wonderful opportunity. When I was asked earlier about historical sites and one individual, I didn't mention the individuals because I think there are so many of them, but quite frankly, I think the individuals are people here in this room. If, in fact, every major social movement, social action, or quite frankly, or every battlefield fought around the world, young people have been in the vanguard. Reverend Edwards, no one knew who Reverend Edwards was when the 187 of them were arrested back 55 years ago. So the opportunity for us to continue to push for social change in this particular era of educational equity is very real. I would also encourage each and every one of you to recognize you have a very important individual power to help change the world in which you live and operate. Our children are suffering across this state, all across this country. They are not only suffering from a lack of educational resources, but sometimes our kids can't study because they don't know where the next meal's coming from. Children in the sixth grade who've never been to a dentist have four or five, six cavities. Children who need whole grain, wheat, milk, are trying to live off a dollar menu at McDonald's. We're giving our children laptops and iPads, but they don't have broadband, a Wi-Fi access, in order to be able to do their homework at home. Our children are dealing with so many serious social issues. So that between the kindergarten and the third grade, of course, it's their time to learn how to read so that from that point on, they can then read to learn. If we don't get our kids early and teach them how to read as early as possible, and that requires the active work of volunteers, just like each and every one of you, to make sure that they learn. Because some kids are growing up in environments where there is not that social and family support that can help empower them to do the great things that we know that they can, in fact, do. And I'm going to go back one step further, too. Making sure our children have adequate medical care and health care is so important. Recognizing that a child born brown or black here in South Carolina has one half the opportunity to make it through infancy than a white child born here in South Carolina. 300,000 children, black and brown, living below 200% below the poverty line in South Carolina. If, in fact, you're born in South Carolina, you have a better chance, if you're black or brown, of living through infancy if you're born in Botswana, Libya, Panama, or Cuba, than being born black or brown here in South Carolina. We've got a lot of work to do. The challenges are myriad, and it's going to require each and every one of us to try and help solve those problems.
I'm going to take a minute and tell you guys about a real-life story that I was a part of. We made an arrest on a case where a young black male had conducted, well, actually, he was burglarizing a home. It turned into a home invasion when the woman that owned the house returned home and found him in her house. He took a baseball bat, and he beat her so very badly that half her scalp was left on that couch. In interviewing this young man, one of his responses was, and I think he was about 17 to 19 years of age, "I have two felonies under my belt. What else am I going to do?" So where a lot of people saw the one tragedy of the lady who had been assaulted, I saw two. Because it's truly a tragedy that a young black male in South Carolina can think at the age of 17 that he does not have a future outside of a life of crime. In talking with him further, I realized that he quit school in the 10th grade. So I can speak to you about what the lack of an education can do to not just that individual, but the other individuals that he harmed and may continue to harm because of his lack of education. So I can tell you that education and educational opportunities are absolutely imperative for our young people today. Absolutely. And we have to, as a community, make sure that they know the history and they know how many people fought so that he could sit in a classroom and get that education. So it's important to us as a community to make sure that our young people know where they came from and what their future could and should be like.
Education is so important, and although I'm not an advocate of maybe book burning, but if we take that, we'd have to go to that extent to change what African Americans and what are in history books and other books about African Americans. I would advocate, I think, to really change it, because so much of our education comes from the curriculum and books in school, and if we have to go back and change Dick and Jane, I mean, you know, so be it, you know, but it should be changed. I look at the state of South Carolina and the fact that in the history books today, my book stands with only around 10% of the history books that really teach true African-American history, even about the Civil Rights Movement. Mm-hmm. For example, we all know about the heroic efforts of Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks. December 1st, when Rosa Parks sits down and Martin Luther King comes to life, wins the Nobel Peace Prize and all the great things that he did being an advocate for nonviolence. But very few people, to show you where this gap in education is, very few people realize that Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and the people of Montgomery, Alabama, in the Montgomery bus boycott, were reacting to what you just alluded to a few minutes ago, and that's Brown versus Board of Education. Now, where historians go wrong, and I believe that books like mine, about 10% of the books that you find in your library here, in libraries wherever you go, only about 10% of the history books are really correct, because chronologically, they don't place the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement in its proper place. For example, if Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks on December 1st, 1955, were reacting to Brown versus Board of Education, then the question to historians should be, where did Brown come from? And Brown comes from Briggs versus Elliott in Clarendon County. And my mother taught for the principal of that school. And if I were to ask this audience here, how many people have ever heard of J.A. Delane or Harry Briggs? As I go through high schools and colleges and on the speaking circuit each February for Black History Month, I ask that question. And it's alarming that we really don't know our own history. But the Clarendon County people have been left out of the history books. Even our Encyclopedia of History that was done here about the state of South Carolina has very few pages about our own South Carolina history. So yes, we should applaud the great efforts and appreciate the teachings of Martin Luther King and the greatness that he was, but we also need to really appreciate South Carolina history. And that should be in our history books so that our young people can really reflect from that, that there were great South Carolinians as well. And I'll conclude by saying when the Briggs case was ongoing in South Carolina in 1948 and 49, and I was 11 years old photographing that, and Thurgood Marshall coming down to Charleston to do the case in Charleston, South Carolina, Martin Luther King at this time and Rosa Parks, not to take anything away from him, and we should have a holiday, but Martin Luther King was still a student at Brown University and had not even married Coretta Scott King. So chronologically, we've got to get our facts right. So yes, if we have to burn our history books and start back over again, be that it may, that might be the way that we'd have to do it. But our history books need to reflect the true African-American experience.
Thank you, Mr. Wells.
Thank you.
Now, Reverend Drummond, I'm told we have a few more minutes. We have your comments, and then we'll have one final question.
We do have some serious problems. Our kids really not being educated in the public schools. They are being resegregated. The church, the home, and the school got to get together at some point in time. I don't know how we bring that about. But teachers are not teaching. Take away the computers and the calculators, and our kids are lost. I see kids now in eighth grade who don't even know their timetables, to say nothing about the parts of speech. And it is because in many instances, teachers are afraid of the students. And therefore we are not teaching. I think we need to go back to the basic to some extent. You know, take me back to where I first learned how to do some things, and we've forgotten the bridge, I think, that brought us over educationally. I don't have the answer, but the church, the school, I saw a lady the other day came to school and started cursing out the teachers. I've been down here 3 times. What's wrong with you teachers? I started to tell her, if you do what you're supposed to do at home, you wouldn't have to come down here the first time to get this.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Drummond. Ms. Fox, you have sat here and listened to these great stories, and I believe we have one more minute, and I think you can do this. As you look around this audience today and as you absorb the history around you, what is the takeaway for you? If young people say, Ms. Fox, what can I do to move forward? What can I do to make a difference? What can I do to be historic? What would be your parting words?
Wow. Today has been unbelievably emotional for me. I never expected to feel such a warmth in my heart as what I felt sitting here today, learning a lot of history and also hoping that I've enlightened and inspired you all as well. What I would tell you all is to never forget, to make sure that you all pay attention, to make sure that you all know that you are Generation Next. You are our future leaders, our lawyers, our first ladies, hopefully our presidents, our doctors, our parents, our preachers. You guys have got to leave a legacy for y'all children. And you're going to be able to do that by improving your education, by paying attention, by voting, by not letting people sell y'all a bag of goods that they cannot deliver on. Pay attention to those who have experience and knowledge, and be respectful. And I want all of you all to be as successful as what you all can possibly be. So one day you can say, Ms. Fox, I saw you in South Carolina and you inspired me that day. And now here's my child and we're successful and we're doing well too. We are all up here because we want to inspire and enlighten you all. Please continue to go forward, my brothers and sisters. We love you. And we care about you tremendously, all right? But please vote, and please continue to pay attention.
Well, thank you very much. Well, that concludes our conversation. Please join me in thanking our panelists for an extraordinary dialogue.
Good job.
Thank you for sharing your insight and your wisdom. We especially would like to thank Dr. David H. Swinton, the president of Benedict College, Mrs. Vareva E. Harris, executive producer of this program at Benedict College. We invite you to join us for next year's 30th annual Benedict College Black History Teleconference on February the 8th, 2017.
And that's our podcast for today. Hallowed Ground, Sites of African American Memory, the topic in the February 29th annual Benedict College Black History Teleconference. Your moderator for the teleconference, Dr. Bobby Donaldson of the University of South Carolina. Speaking of Schools is a production of South Carolina's Department of Education. We're heard here each week at this website and feature news from across South Carolina as it relates to education in our state. We'll have another podcast for you next week. We'd like to thank you for being with us today on Speaking of Schools. The pleasure of your company is something that we appreciate each week, and we invite you to join us again next week when we'll be Speaking of Schools.